Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of the Mundane Festival podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lamberth. Today is Monday, August 5th, 2019. Remember, as always, you can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and on Podbean, the host site. If you like this show, please rate and review it on Apple Podcasts and or Stitcher. Give it a 5-star review. Let everyone know why you like it, because it will make me feel good about myself and most of the life decisions that I've made so far. You can email the show at mundanefestivalpod@gmail.com. Let me know what's on your mind. More importantly, what's on your heart. You can like the show on Facebook. You can follow it on Twitter at Mundane Festival. And you can follow me, your host, the guy talking to you right now, on Twitter at Chris Lamberth. This is episode 367. I have a super special guest, toy designer David Vonner from Netflix's The Toys That Made Us. Super excited to share that conversation with you. I'll do that in a few moments, but right now I'm going to talk to you. I'm sitting here in my apartment. It's really hot because I've turned the air conditioner off to enhance the sound quality of this podcast, because I care about you so much and what you've done for me as a host. So I just want the podcast to be good for you. So I just got off work and went to Trader Joe's for the first time. First time in a long time, really. I think the first time that I went to Trader Joe's, I was in San Francisco. And that was when I was opening for Hardwick. So that was like 6 years ago. So it was a long time ago. And it was cool. Like, you know, whatever. It ain't Wegmans, you know what I'm saying? But shout out to a friend of the podcast, Abby Crutchfield, because she had posted on her Instagram that she was getting some waffles. She made like a little joke about it, like her kid had like some toy waffles or something. And she had some like multigrain waffles that she bought from Trader Joe's. And I was like, oh, how are those waffles? And she said, I don't know. And that was like 2 weeks ago. So I'm sitting at work and I get this message. I get a private message from Abby. She's like, hey, those waffles are good. You should check them out. And I was like, all right. You got me one to go today. I'm going to go after work and check it out and get some or whatever. And so I did. But my God, Trader Joe's, at least in Westwood, New Jersey, it's lit, man. They're having renovations and stuff. They're under construction, but they're still open while they're remodeling and whatnot. But it was it was people in there knocking you over. This lady hit me with a purse by accident and it didn't hurt, but it was just like, damn. I was like, oh my God, I'm sorry. I think I might've been the only black person in that Trader Joe's at that time. I'm not saying that black people don't go to Trader Joe's. It was just no black people but me at that Trader Joe's at that time. And it was just lit, man. Like, you people would just run you over. Just, I don't know if it was because of the first of the month, but once I got in line, one of the cashiers said, yeah, you know, it's pretty crazy in here because people are coming back home from the shore points, and I guess they're restocking everything. But it was a lot of people in there. Relatively cheap prices, like reasonable prices at Trader Joe's. I was impressed. So I got some of those waffles. I got some figs, like Trader Joe's Fig Newton brand, the Trader Joe's brand figs. And some aloe vera gel. I have to try some. I don't know what you guys use for your skin, but I really like aloe vera gel. The best that I've had for quite some time was from GNC. And it's just something you can put on your face and then you can, it's just good. It's good. I like it. And my mom put me onto it years ago. And then all of a sudden, maybe 2 to 3 years ago, they stopped selling the kind that comes in like a little tube that costs, maybe it costs $1, where you get like a handful of them and you pay under $10. They used to have a deal and all that shit. And it was great. And it was just good to it wouldn't like break you if yeah I have sensitive skin and I didn't break out from using it and all that stuff, and it was really cool. So I'm gonna give this, I tried the aloe vera gel that they have at Whole Foods, and then I'm trying this one. We'll see how it goes. I'll let you know. Message me and let me know where you can get some good aloe vera gel from. But right now I'm going to try this Trader Joe's aloe vera gel. That was a hell of a tangent. But so I went there, but I was like, damn, this is pretty lit. And this is supposed to be like, it's not like it's Bergen County. There's like a lot of wealth in this area, and there's a lot of people. It's kind of a hoity-toity. It could be a little hoity-toity, but I even think I've been to like there's a market in Franklin Lakes, which is maybe like 15 to 20 minutes northwest of where I was, or at least 20 minutes from where I live. And those people have a lot of money. And there's certain places in Bergen County where it's just like super wealthy, but I don't know the clientele, like they were just savages, man. I don't know. I'm not going to say like they had money. If they had money like that, they were animals, you know, and they were just like all over the place. So, yeah, I don't know what it was, but it was pretty intense. I was nervous for a bit, and I was getting back to my car. I was taking my groceries back to the car, and this lady, it's always a white woman. It's always like a middle-aged white woman. She like kind of cut in front of me to put her groceries in her car. I said, "Ma'am, if you let me get by, I'll be out of your way. I get in my car and I'll be out of your way." And she said, I'll just put it in on this other side. I was like, okay. It's just like, she couldn't wait. I was like, let me get out of here. But they had some stuff was reasonably priced stuff. I'll, let you know how those waffles taste. I don't think I've ever had multigrain waffles, but I'll try them sometime this week. I was pleased. Last week was cool, busy, really super busy, but I did a show. I did the John Minus fundraiser, the non-productive comedy show. Shout out to everybody that came. It was really fun. I was surprised that John actually showed up. I know he was in recovery, and sometimes he posts on Facebook how he's feeling and stuff, but he came through, and he said that it was hard for him. He couldn't really laugh because he would hurt his neck and whatnot. He would hurt himself from laughing, but it was really fun. And it ended up, I talked about it on the, if you listen to the Patreon episode, I mentioned it in passing and then mentioned it in my conversation with David. But it was something that just kind of, it was one of those moments that just kind of opened my eyes about community. Like I always knew that it was there, but it just made me feel good. It was just in the midst of everything that's going on, you know, with the mass shootings that have been going on for 20 years, really. I would say Columbine would low key be the advent of, you know, these mass shootings. And you can mark that as like, you know, those kids that survived Columbine had to celebrate their 20 year high school reunion. So, I mean, that's when I was really made aware of it. I think the nation as a whole really was. And you have people that talk really eloquent about it on social media and podcasts, and you know, and it's definitely a problem, and we talk about it, you know, all the time. But heart goes out to those people that lost loved ones, just trying to shop for school supplies and just trying to live their life, and you get struck down by that bullshit by American terrorists. And Lupe Fiasco had a song about that. It would be interesting. I want to look at those lyrics to remember that song. Then the New York comedy community tragedy happened. I'm not going to go too much into it, but I'll just say rest in peace to David Kimowitz, who was a co-owner of the Stand Comedy Club in New York City. Very nice guy. I'm not going to make it about me, but my interactions with him, he was very kind and always had a smile on his face. And people that knew him better than I did all had some really kind words about him and his family. But how, you know, everybody's hurt over it, obviously. And it's a tragedy. It's just really, really fucking bad. It's nothing. It's hard to really, you know, say things, you know, but it fucking sucks. But back to like a moment that you can be there for a friend in need and just kind of step up to the plate and just to be there for somebody physically. The show ended up being, because I was like, oh, I'm going to work on a set and I have this bit that I'm working on that I know John would like because it's about like Transformers. So I did that bit and riffed a little bit. But there are some other guys like Justin Williams. Shout out to Justin Williams, a friend of the podcast, who basically roasted John and roasted everybody, and people were roasting John. I was like, oh man, this is turning into a roasted John. And it was really, really fun, really made me feel good that I was a part of that. I think, you know, you spend a lot of time trying to find your people and your tribe. And to a certain degree, I found that. Like, I was able to, you know, do that in Chicago and now here in New York, and to have people that, you know, they're not necessarily my BFFs, but we're brothers in arms, brothers and sisters in arms. So that's something positive that I got out of last week. And I wanted to say, what else? You can catch me this Saturday at the Upright Citizens Brigade at Subculture. Subculture is, do I want to say that that's like, that's West Side? Is that considered to be West Side? It's on Bleecker Street, West Village, kind of. What would you call that? NoHo? They're saying it's NoHo. It's right before you get to LES, the cutoff. Anyway, it's 45 Bleecker Street. It's at 11:30 on Saturday night, and it's hosted by Allison Leiby, who is a comic and writer. She's written for a bunch of cool TV shows. And I did it maybe 5 or 6 years ago and had done it when it was at UCB East in the East Village. And I'm looking forward to performing and doing it. It's like where comics will get up and tell a story and make it funny, make it interesting and all that good stuff. So super excited to be there. You can catch me there. I think the tickets are like $15. My dad's calling me. I have to call him back real quick. So I'm wrap this up a little bit. And and you can also catch me on the SNL Nerds podcast with Darren Patterson and John Trumbull, really cool comics. You know, Darren is a friend of the podcast. You've heard him on the show. They have a show where they recap SNL episodes, and in the off season they review movies. And I think they just kind of started up within the last year or so. And so I was on yesterday and the episode is up now, and I've retweeted it. It's on my timeline and you can check that out. We had fun. We were talking about Ladies Man. We reviewed Ladies Man and it was a good time. And I think that's it. Should I get Madden? I think that's another thing I'm thinking about. Should I get Madden? Some of my friends are getting it. I think some of them bought it so they could play with me. And so two people have already texted me. It's like, I got it. I'm downloading it now. You should get it. Get it, Chris. Get it. So we can play together. And there's one, the most honest thing I got on this was, I think it was Ray Marshall. I want to say it was him. Comic Ray Marshall. But it was the funniest shit that I could relate to it. And I'll try to find it on Facebook. I didn't know that I was going to talk about it here, but I'm going to try to find this on my Facebook feed. Cause I wrote on Facebook and Twitter, like, are you guys getting Madden 20? And I went, yeah, it was Ray. He said, so I said, are y'all getting Madden 20? And Ray says, bought Madden 19 and never played it. We'll probably get Madden 20 and not play that either. I need help. Yeah, that's true. That I don't do that. I did get Madden 19 like a couple of months ago, and I only played it for like an hour. And I buy 2K every year because I love 2K and I love the updates and the slight differences that they make to the fucking thing. And it's like every year there's more sweat on the players. I don't know if they're trying to sell. Mostly dudes buy this game. And every year they do say, they're like, oh, my God, look at the graphics. Look so much better. And you could see like sweat, all this sweat on Giannis or James Harden. And it's like, is that trying to turn people on? But you don't really see the close ups that much unless they dunk or something. I don't know if how different it is. Maybe there's slight changes, but whatever it is, I'm like there every year for it. I just don't indulge in those points, like that bullshit that they try to make you make the game a role playing game and they make you try to spend money on all that shit. I don't do that. I just like the updated roster shit and the little intricacies they do with the movements and all that. So I don't know. But yeah, it's a lot of homoeroticism in the way that they advertise these games. The NBA 2K. It's just like, oh my God, it looks different. His sweat is glistening more in this. I have to get the new I have to get the update. All right. Let's just bring this to David Vonner. David Vonner is a guy. He's a toy designer. He's worked for Hasbro. Now he's with Mattel. He's worked for a lot of different companies, but he's currently with Mattel and working on the WWE figures. Really cool guy. I found out about him on this Netflix series called The Toys That Made Us. And I was just really interested in him because he was the only black guy that they showed out of all the episodes I watched. He was the only black dude. And that intrigued me because I was thinking about, you know, with the advent of like Black Panther and Finn from in Star Wars and how I started to get back into collecting. I was wondering about all the black people that are involved in the industry and collecting and also from the artistic side of things. And I follow a handful of people, at least the prominent people that I know of are people of color, that at least the folks that I like. And the people that I just, there's quite a few people of color that are doing it and it's cool and it's nice. That's all I'm saying. I'm not trying to be divisive, okay, in this climate. Not trying to be that way. But it intrigued me and I reached out to David on Facebook and he was so kind very kind with his time and all the knowledge he dropped. And I think initially he was talking to me about like comic books and stuff. Like I knew what he was talking about. So there was this kind of aha moment that I had in conversation with him that was pretty neat. And I'm just like a kind of a casual comic book guy, movie, casual kind of dude. So I always love hearing from people that know way more than I do. And I think this is a great conversation and I'm super excited to share this with you. So please enjoy my chat with the great David Vonner. So we'll just start now. How was Comic-Con?
Oh man, it was dope, man. It was real, real dope. We had our Macho Man, our Slim Jim Macho Man figure was our Comic-Con exclusive and it sold out like super quick on Entertainment Earth. Like it shut Entertainment Earth down actually. Wow. And then during the con, you know, we had it marked down for $20 for $19.99 and it sold out like every day. So it was
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, it was cool, man. It was real. The fans supported it a lot, so it was really dope.
Are the exclusive figures usually are they usually that low of a price, or do they jack the prices up for Comic-Con normally?
Well, see, that's the thing. Usually the prices are jacked up, but this time it was actually marked down.
Okay. And you're with Mattel now, right?
Right.
And how long were you there at Comic-Con?
The whole time, all 4 days.
Okay. And what kind of stuff were you doing down there besides pushing that figure?
Well, we also had the superstars there too. We had Kofi Kingston was there.
Okay.
Becky Lynch was there. Rey Mysterio showed up at our panel, so it was really dope. You know, we had we showcased some new stuff that we have coming down the pike.
Okay.
And so, you know, the panel was really, really good. And we also showed our new Masters of Universe / WWE mashup figures.
Oh, wow.
Really, 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 really dope.
Okay.
So, and Triple H gave us a really good kind of, you know, first step with that. And it was really cool. So yeah, we displayed that, and other than that, you know, is you know, Comic-Con is like a huge family reunion, you know, so you get to see your friends and you know, your vendors and all that, your partners, you know, it's a lot of meetings and all that, but it's also like a family reunion, you know, too. So it was good to see all the guys and you know, see some people from back in the day and meet some new friends and all that. So it was cool.
Now, I know that's the biggest. Is that I'm assuming that's the biggest con of the year, correct?
Yeah. You know, it's like the biggest pop culture, you know, comic book convention. You know, it's really not a comic book convention, but it's a pop culture convention.
And how many do you attend a year? Like, are you at the major ones, or how does that work?
I used to do that San Diego Comic Con. Sometimes I do New York Comic Con.
Okay.
But that's usually it. You know, I only could do but so much.
Mm-hmm. Sure,
you
sure.
Know, back in the day, I used to try to do whatever, whenever. You know.
Yeah.
You know, the Wizard Cons, New York Con, all that stuff.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'll do. There's one here in Anaheim too.
Okay.
I'll do that one, and sometimes I'll speak on a panel, you know. Yeah, you know, I do like maybe two a year.
Okay.
One or two a year.
How did you feel about, I mean, I know we talked a month ago, and we were talking about comic book movies and stuff like that. How did you, do you have any type of like reaction to what Kevin Feige and all of them were talking about with the new phases of the Marvel Cinematic Universe? Did you have any type of reaction?
It was good to see and hear, man. I mean, like, you know, Shang-Chi is something that, you know, I've always just loved Shang-Chi since I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just loving Bruce Lee, and Shang-Chi was just the comic book version of that. You know, it was a character that I wished I had, you know, had, you know, put into the 3¾-inch line that I worked on.
Mm-hmm.
It did make it into the Superhero Squad line. He did make it into there, but you know, I wish he would have been in Marvel Legends and Marvel Universe sooner. But they also unveiled the Shang-Chi figure too, which was so super, super cool.
Mm-hmm.
But to see Shang-Chi get a finally get his just due, and I've always been an Eternals fan. You know, I always, Icarus is like my Icarus is actually like my fifth favorite character.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So you know, and I've always, you know, always dug, you know, just everything about the Eternals. So to you know, see the whole cast like kind of come out and everything was really cool. But Blade, man, you know, for me, Blade was the real surprise,
because sure.
Blade 2 is still my favorite Marvel movie.
Yeah,
and that it still holds up to this day. So And I really dig Mahershala Ali, you know,
Yeah.
and you know, this is his third character, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, I'm interested to see his take on it. You know, he's a serious actor, and that's another thing I love about Marvel too, is that they really have, you know, they really have a mix of cast members that are like Academy Award winning, like really serious actors, man, in
Yeah.
these roles that really give these characters some legitimacy, you know, and give these characters weight, you know, which is what I really dig. So I'm really interested in seeing Mahershala Ali's take on Blade, man. I think he's going to do a fantastic job, and you know, so far Marvel's like, you know, they're firing on all cylinders. Whether how I personally feel about the movies or not, you know, is they're firing on all cylinders, you know, so they're doing it.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. I feel like as somebody who and I want your perspective on this. I want you to speak on it a little bit. But I find like with my friends that I talk to that are heavier into it than I am, I at least feel like the actors that they have that they cast are really talented and like you said brings more weight to it. It makes things more palpable and they're not messing around. So it's going to make me, as somebody who's a casual viewer, invest a little more on,
Right.
you know,
Yeah.
and I, it's kind of sad how like they don't consider these people for awards, you know, some really terrific performances that you see all the time.
I know, you know, that's the thing about, it's a shame that Hollywood still, no matter what, view these characters as comic book characters, these movies, you know, just and just what their view of comic books are, you know, it's like it's a kid's medium.
Yeah.
But you know, to be able to translate, you know, these characters the way that these actors do, man, they definitely deserve, like Anthony Hopkins is Odin, you know, and I mean, just even if you even the Marvel movies that people didn't like the Hulk and all that, like they still had, you know, some serious actors in there. You know, Eric
Yeah.
Banner was serious, you know what I mean? And
Yeah.
so, you know, I kind of, you know, I Lawrence Fishburne as Silver Surfer, you know, people tend to forget that,
Oh
you
yeah,
know.
I didn't really remember that either. Well, people kind of forget those Fantastic Four movies. I
Right, they do,
yeah.
but you know, I mean, sometimes if you just take the emotion out of it, you
Yeah.
know, they're not good films, but they got like there's nuggets in there that you can pull from. That is like, all right, I like that. I like that. I wish it would have been that. You know,
Sure.
just, and it's funny that you mentioned that, because I was just talking to somebody about that the other day, and it's just about, had Galactus just showed up in that Fantastic Four movie, man, it would have just done it. You
Right.
know, it just would have sent it over the top. That's all we needed was to see Galactus, you know, but in his true form.
How do you feel about this? Because I have a lot of friends that they'll get, and there's nothing that any of these, like maybe 25, 30 years ago, with the exception of the Christopher Reeve Superman movies and the Michael Keaton Batman flicks, we didn't, I never really expected to see anything like this. And then, you know, maybe 2002, the first Spider-Man, 2001, 2002, whenever that first Spider-Man, the Sam Raimi Spider-Man comes out, I was intrigued. I was like, oh my God, a Spider-Man, one of my favorite comic book characters, come, you know, live action. I was excited about it. But then this onslaught of like maybe like the last 11 years, you have these movies. Come from your perspective as a guy who grew up reading all these books, loving these characters, how do you look at these films as just another version of telling a story, do you get upset when they don't stick to the books, or how do you feel about these films as somebody who's a real comic book fan?
I think that, first of all, I think that we always tend to forget that Wesley Snipes and Blade is really what kicked this all off.
Agreed.
Like we cannot give him enough credit in Amin-Ra Films and New Line Cinema and what, you know, Marvel and what they did. And mm-hmm. I mean, they really kicked everything off. And, you know, it's funny because Blade was something, you know, it was a throwaway character. Like, Blade was nothing like how he is in the comic books. You know, Blade was kind of like this, black exploitation type character, you know, but they made him, you know, it was a different transformation. Well, he was in, you know, I mean, originally when the character was originally created, you know, he was very different, mm-hmm. and the film really added an edginess to it of what it could be done. So, and then the X-Men movies came and all that. And I think that we were just kind of excited to see these characters on film.
Right.
You know, it was like, we never thought it would ever see Wolverine and Cyclops on film and all that.
Right.
You know, kind of like the Transformers movie. Like, you know, you never thought you would see a Transformers movie.
Yeah.
So some things you just kind of took, you know, some liberties you just kind of went along with for the ride.
But, sure.
You know, Hollywood has always dabbled in it. They just never really gave it its just due.
Sure, right.
You know, like the Road to Perdition is based off a comic book, you know, right. Like Lone Wolf and Cub and all that. So it's always kind of dibble and dabble. Star Wars, I mean, Darth Vader is Dr. Doom, you know, so, you know, there's a lot of inspiration from that.
Right.
But, you know, I guess like seeing these movies, some I can go along with because, you know, I mean, I was a Marvel zombie, you know,
okay.
That was it, you know, and I remember even seeing like the Michael Keaton Batman movie.
Yeah.
Like that was, to me, that was like, I had to convince myself that the reason why I was seeing this movie was out of respect and honor because of Bob Kane.
Okay.
That's how much I hated DC. Like, I didn't want to give DC props. I didn't want to, you know, like the only reason why I even bought a Batman shirt was out of respect to Bob Kane.
Okay.
So it was like me seeing this Batman movie, I hated it. I didn't want to watch it, you know, but I did like it.
Okay.
You know? I mean, you know, it really did set things off and for me, like it opened up the realm of possibility, like what else there could be.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, but then I also hated the fact that it was good. You know, I wanted it to flop. I wanted it to fail because I was such a Marvel fan.
Yeah.
You know, and it's funny too. Like, you know, as far as the movies go, you know, as like now people just automatically praise Marvel movies and diss DC. But, you know, DC movies have kind of always saved us. You know, Superman. The first, you know, Superman the motion picture that saved us and that kind of brought some respect to, you know, that genre. Like, you know, it was that was done by, well, the screenplay was done by Mario Puzo, you know, and mm-hmm. I mean, it was real. Christopher Reeve done, you know, he was known for that, you know, and Gene Hackman and all that. And then, you know, Michael Keaton Batman, it was like part of that. You know, resurgence, you know, and you know, I think we just gotta, I just hate the battle between DC and Marvel. Like,
sure.
People automatically love the Marvel movies and hate the DC movies.
I remember
just kind of watch it for what it is, you know?
I feel you, man, because I remember seeing Batman versus Superman. I know people shat on it. It was like, I was like, all right, it's all right. But I happened to be sitting by this little kid and his mother. And when Superman came on screen, the little kid was like, Superman, like he was excited. And I'm like, isn't that what it's really supposed to be about to a certain degree? Like a little kid seeing the superhero and being excited.
Right.
I feel like sometimes we lose that a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and it's funny, like for me, like I really, really love Man of Steel.
Okay.
You know, and I don't look at it as a Superman movie, you know. And it's funny that you mentioned that little kid, because for me, I view that movie as that kid Kal-El who is totally like kind of jacked up. He doesn't know what to do and how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And this is like real world shit, you know. Yeah. Not in that he's gonna fly around and start automatically saving people and be Superboy and all that. Like he really, like his pops is like, maybe you shouldn't save people, you know, and you need to learn the value of yourself first before you can even start learning the value of saving other people. Of, you know what I mean?
Like, right, right.
Like there's levels to it, and you're not going to automatically know how to be this thing that you think that you want to be.
Mm-hmm.
There's no roadmap to it, and that's what I loved about it, because for me it wasn't a Superman movie. It was that little kid. How would that little kid feel if his mom was threatened but this little kid had all this power?
Yeah.
Flip the hell out, like, and kind of like what when he originally flipped out on those Kryptonians, you know what I mean? Like his mom was in danger and he flipped out.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like with Zod, like he flipped out, you know. He had all this power. He didn't know what to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then everyone gets all sensitive about it was like multiple 9/11s and Superman would never do that. And yeah, you're right. Superman wouldn't do that because this is Kal-El.
Mm.
Kal-El has to learn how to be Superman. You know what I mean? And matter of fact, he just found out he's Kal-El. You know what I mean? Like Clark got to learn a whole lot of stuff. There's a lot of personalities going on that this cat has to wrap his mind around.
You make me look at that differently.
Right. And sometimes I think we lose sight of that. That's why I dig the dynamic between Batman and Superman, not because the whole light and dark kind of thing, but because they got some complex personalities going on that they have to wrap their minds around.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like Superman, this kid has all this power, and then not only, you know, is he ordained to kind of be this being, but he's also putting it on himself. Like, how do you do that? Like, how do you even do that? You know, and everything is going to affect you. And like, just how do you wrap your mind around that? But and we all know about Batman, about having, you know, being there with your parents murdered right in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that alone is, this kid is a case study for all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and, I mean, the same thing that happened. I mean, this kid is not too different from Michael Myers and shit. This kid could be a Michael Myers just like that.
Yeah.
There's no difference between Michael Myers and Batman.
Well, cause I know, like, when every time a movie, when I have a good buddy that, like, for instance, like Spider-Man came out, Far From Home came out last month, and I watched it. I was like, all right, I enjoyed that. And then my homie calls me up. He's like, this is why I hated it. And he just goes down this list, and it's like, it's not like the book. It's not like this. This is different. They're trying to do this. And it's just like, I was like, right. Damn. Well, I was like, is that negate? That's kind of like negating the experience that I had. But then,
yeah.
But at the same time, I kind of like to take in everything that he says too, you know. Right. I don't know.
That, you know, that's actually my problem with Marvel movies, because I'm such a Marvel comic book fan.
Mm-hmm.
and then within that fan, I'm a fan of continuity, and then within that, I'm a fan of the 616 continuity. You know what I mean?
What's that mean?
Which it's like, if to me, if the storyline doesn't follow the original form of groundwork that like Stan Lee put out.
Okay.
And then other writers picked up on.
Mm-hmm.
Then, you know, if it's out of that 616 continuity, then for me, that's when my suspension of disbelief becomes disrupted, and then I start questioning every little thing that's going on.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like your boy. Like, it's not like the books, and it's not like this. And, well, when we come into a movie, we're automatically saying, all right, what we see is, we know it's not real. We already know that. So we're gonna not question it.
Yeah.
We're just going to take it in. And I think that's one reason why I can take in DC movies a little bit better than Marvel movies, because the DC movies I'm not so familiar with.
You know,
they're not so embedded in my DNA. The Marvel movies are so embedded in my DNA. Well, I mean, Marvel is like that 616, continuity and Fantastic Four and, you know, just Avengers and how just how the original comics are.
Okay, and like go ahead.
I remember when the Ultimate Universe started. Like, I actually like hated that shit. I hated it because it was like, why disrupt the good thing? Like, why retell the origin of Marvel this way when it doesn't need to be?
Yeah,
and then this is going to be the groundwork for Hollywood, like. That's wrong. Like, and so that's where my mind automatically goes.
Well, this is really interesting because, like, I never heard. Okay, so this I gotta, because I don't know this. Like, you are the Bible, because I've never talked about it, this to anyone. So the Earth 616 Wikipedia says what you just said, basically, in the fictional Marvel Comics universe multiverse, Earth 616 is the primary continuity in which most Marvel comics titles take place. So it's harder for you to just like relate to these. So that means you hated Into the Spider-Verse.
Well, see, no, I love, I'm just messing with you. I dug that.
Yeah.
Now I dug that because it was like a comic book that came to life.
Yeah.
And I think because I was so amazed by the visuals of it,
yeah,
it just swept me away, and I didn't question anything. Like, I loved the way Kingpin looked.
Yeah,
you know, and I loved the way Miles Morales looked. I mean, I just loved the animation. I loved the subtle pop art stuff that they had going on, and the textures and all that. And I was just amazed by it, and I was amazed the way that I was amazed with that. I was amazed with Black Panther, but then I was also amazed with Black Panther in a whole different emotional way, like a different dimension.
Yeah.
Like a different, because I never, because it was like, because that went to like I never felt that personal towards a film like that. Wasn't supposed to strike a personal chord, like, you know, like watching Roots, I feel personal connected to that because that's like our history and our culture.
Correct.
But I didn't expect to feel so personally connected to Black Panther. Like, damn, like it was so much that I realized that we didn't see in film that we saw in film in that movie.
Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned that, because it's a lot of my friends, my black male friends, like talked about crying when they saw it.
Oh, but, I did too. Yeah. I couldn't stop.
Yeah,
I couldn't stop. But it was because I was being almost like overwhelmed with things I had never seen before. Like, I never had seen, I had just never seen those portrayals like that before.
Yeah.
Like, it was like, not only was it good acting, but damn, like I never. I like, it was so many subtle things in that movie that was so much a part of me growing up, like the Public Enemy posters in my room.
Yeah.
And feeling like how crack was taking us out, and feeling angry about it, feeling angry about why Africa left us abandoned.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's a real feeling that we've had. Like, yo, we're like this. We are the lost tribe.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, there's no nation on there's no people on this planet like African Americans. We are lost. Like we can't. There's no home for us to go back to.
Right. When they tell us to go back, you're just like
there's right. There's yeah. no place for us to go back to. And we were kind of like, I mean, to go deep with it, we were like the byproducts of a tribal war. You know what I mean? And
right.
there was old beefs that was going on. It just so happened that these people showed up and start manipulating this war.
Yeah.
Which turned into other things, you know, and but we're lost. And so that feeling of anger, like, yo, man, you should have done something for us. I was like, hell yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I was feeling Killmonger. I was feeling like it was bringing tears to my eyes because, like, yo, that cat was saying what the hell we were so angry about. What yeah. Chuck B was saying.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, we felt that. I felt that.
Yeah. I would just say, like, he, like, everybody's like, oh, Killmonger's right. But, like, he just went about it the wrong way. I think the way this stuff that he was doing, but.
Well, I think he went about it the way that his feelings guided him to go because yeah. he was, you know what I mean? It was like, if you have all these resources, why didn't you come and help us?
Mm-hmm.
But knowing that we were going through what we went through. And that's deep. Like, that movie touched on some deep topics and subjects that are so complex in the African American community.
Yeah.
It's complex. Like there was a lot of Pan-Africanism in this movie, and people don't even understand what Pan-Africanism is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just how this movie even came about, you know, right. But I mean, it really was, but I mean, to see like how we were portrayed as far as our dress, our mannerisms, our hair, our culture, what could have been, what could be, you know, it had all that.
Yeah.
What once was, it had everything. It touched on so many things that was just so overwhelming.
Absolutely.
And I was like, damn. And this is, and the reason why I felt so good about it, because it was a Marvel movie. And like, once again, like Marvel in the 60s was part of the counterculture, was part of this culture that was speaking against, you know, Nixon and the things that was going on, the Vietnam War, and you know, Marvel was speaking up against that in their own way,
right?
Through these stories, you know, so to have Black Panther touch on to be such a cultural, you know, lightning rod for what it was, but to touch on so many things so eloquently, you know, it wasn't forced.
Yeah.
It wasn't forced, because as deep as it got, it was still a cool ass superhero movie.
Yeah. And I think it's one of the things that led me to you, to this conversation that we're having now, because I want to say because you're a toy designer, and I want to get into that and your background even more, but I would say that it kind of awakened something to me seeing him in Civil War and Captain America's Civil War. I was like, oh my God, this guy, Black Panther's cool as hell. Like, I had known about the character, but I didn't really know much of anything about him. And then like, I started seeing like the action figure, like that first wave of whatever that Marvel Legends wave of Civil War was. That figure was so hard to find, and I had bought two of them, and one that I took out of the box and one that I just left in the box. And that kind of sparked something in me, because I had never really, like, just thinking back as a kid, I was asking my cousins this. I was like, you know, I'll be 40 in February. And I was saying, like, did I ever really have that many Black action figures? And I was thinking, like, I had a Ghostbusters, like, Ray, the Oh my God. Ray from the Ghostbusters. What's the actor's name? Eddie. Jesus Christ.
Oh yeah.
Oh my God. I'll get it. But I was thinking about that. No, Ray wasn't the black guy. Winston. Winston was the black dude. I hate when I do this. I just saw his picture. I'm on IMDb. Winston Zeddemore. Ernie Hudson. That's it. So I remember having him. I don't think Snake Eyes was black from G.I. Joe, right? We didn't know what he was.
No, he was just colored black. But you know, it's funny. It's funny. I used to think Destro was black, though, because of his voice.
Yeah. Snake Eyes jumped high in the video game for Nintendo. But to my point, like, I remember it's like being excited about that figure. That was like 3 or 4 years ago. So I'm a dude in his 30s. And then maybe the Finn character from The Force Awakens. I remember seeing that trailer. I was like, is this a black stormtrooper? Who is this guy? Is this guy black? And then all the fanfare, the hate going at him when that trailer came out. We didn't know who was going to be the Jedi, but that made me excited. So I got a couple of his figures. And then that just kind of got me into kind of just sporadically collecting action figures and mainly the black ones. Now, how did you get into toy design? I know, like, where'd you grow up, and how'd you like start getting yourself involved in this world?
I grew up in Atlantic City, New Jersey.
Okay.
And Atlantic City is a casino town.
Where, yes.
When I was born in 1972.
Okay.
So it was like known as the vacation capital of the world.
Wow.
Or the playground of the world. That's what it was known as. The playground of the world. At that, you know, from the 20s and all that. And I don't know if you ever used to watch that movie Boardwalk Empire on HBO.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, yeah, back in the day it was very much like that.
Mm-hmm.
But Atlantic City is also predominantly black too. So, you know, being that it's predominantly black, you know, it was you know, it's kind of like you know, for a long time there was a food desert there, like there was no grocery store in Atlantic City. You know, even though it had all these casinos there and everything. And you know, I grew up in the projects, Pitney Village, and you know, when I was a kid, I didn't know it was the projects. You know, it was dope.
Yeah, sure.
You know, it's like we didn't actually have a lot of the problems, you know, that eventually wound up happening there. But, you know, Atlantic City, and I think that's what it was. Like, even though it was predominantly black and it had predominantly black problems and issues, we kind of really didn't see it that way, you know, because it was always just stuff to do, you
sure.
know, and back when I was a kid and all that. But I used to go, like, to my grandmother's house, and my grandmother used to live, like, six, seven miles out in this next town called Pleasantville.
Okay.
So, and then that was almost like the country, you know, it seemed like you're going from the city to, like, the country back then.
Right.
But that's where I would spend, like, my weekends and my summers, and then that's where I eventually wound up going to junior high and in high school in Pleasantville. So, you know, but it was, you know, basically a resort town. You know, but I was always a comic book kid, you know, just always into comic books and cartoons, and I'm the only child, so I always had toys and action figures and stuff. So I just always had stuff.
Yeah.
You know, but you know, amongst all the ripping and running that I would do, I would also have time to draw. So, you know, I would draw superheroes and all that, and try to trace and, you know, draw my own, draw from memory and all that, you know. and eventually it just got better and better. So I wanted to be, originally I wanted to be a comic book illustrator. I wanted to draw for Marvel Comics. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what I wanted to do.
Right.
Like I wanted to draw Thor and Silver Surfer and Spider-Man for Marvel. And, but at that time, you know, comic book characters, they really didn't get paid a lot. And I wanted to go to the Joe Kubert School of Art, and which was like a comic book school. And my mom, you know, she was like, look, you got to have something that's going to, you know, that you're going to fall back on. So eventually I wound up going to the Art Institute of Philadelphia, and I majored in advertising and graphic design. And, you know, and which was a difficult transition. I didn't want to do that, but you know, it was you know, at the time computers was becoming a big thing, and I remember, like, you know, starting off on Photoshop like 2.5.
Okay.
And wow. But you know, it was, my mom had convinced me that it was something to fall back, advertising would be something to fall back on, you know, I could do illustration, but advertising would always be there, you know. And yeah, there was always a lot of ad, you know, there was a few ad agencies in Atlantic City, and then New York still had an ad agency. So, you know, at that time, you know, working for an ad agency was still like a big deal.
Sure.
So when I graduated the Art Institute, there was actually a ad in the newspaper for a product designer for this company called Spencer Gifts.
Yes.
And Spencer Gifts has like the stores that's in all the malls and everything. And they sell, like, you know, fantasy stuff and rock and roll and mm-hmm. all that. Well, it's funny, like their headquarters is in my hometown.
Oh, okay.
But I used to love going in Spencer Gifts when I was a kid, seeing all the crazy stuff. Like, I would go to the comic book store, and then from the comic book store, you know, we would go in Spencer Gifts. And so I was always, you know, and that actually going into Spencer Gifts made me a fan of classic rock and roll, which made me a fan of the Beatles and Jimi Hendrix and Cream and Led Zeppelin and all that.
Okay.
So when I saw that ad in the paper, I took everything that was in my portfolio and I threw it out, man. And I just redid my portfolio that weekend of everything that I thought that Spencer's was about. And I went in there for an interview, and I had a suit that was like two sizes too big, man. And I had this giant portfolio, and I'm showing them my stuff, and like, and just drawings and everything, and they gave me a shot, you know. I was the first product designer hired on staff, and I was the first Black product designer hired on staff.
Can you say that in your career? Because when I saw you in the Toys That Made Us, I was like, a Black guy. All right. You know, were you the first Black dude in a lot of the situations that you were in when you were coming up, or at least one of them?
I mean, at Spencer's, I mean, there was a Black art director there, but he was their graphic guy. But you know, for dedicated for product design, like at Spencer Gifts, I was the first Black, you know, guy there.
Okay,
and then from there, you know, it was never like I was the first. But definitely I was one of the few or the only.
Sure.
You know, when I worked at Toy Biz, at Toy Biz, it was actually the most kind of like the most diverse company I've kind of been with, you know, because we had Asians, we had Dominican, we had Puerto Rican, we had Black. I mean, it was dope.
I think Toy Biz was the first. The very first action figure that I ordered, that my dad let me use his credit card, I ordered the movie version of that Batman, that Michael Keaton Batman.
Oh, wow.
That was a dope figure because he had that, like, retractable belt. Like, you know, like his belt would pull out, mm-hmm. and you could, like, kind of, like, use it as a grappling hook type thing. I remember
right,
that.
Right.
Yeah, that was Toy Biz was dope.
Yeah.
Where are they stationed at? Where was their headquarters?
They were in New York.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
And you know, Toy Biz had brought Marvel out of bankruptcy. You know, so when I was there, Toy Biz had owned Marvel, and it was super cool, man. I mean, like I said, it was a diverse. We had Jamaican there, you know, we had Japanese, you name it, man, because it was New York, you know, and New York is a melting pot, you know, so, and Marvel was definitely had reflected of that. Toy Biz was definitely reflective of that. And also Joe Quesada, you know, he was the editor in chief at that time. So, I mean, it was, our boss, Joanne McLaughlin, you know, was female. And I mean, we had a lot of diversity there that was happening at that time.
Okay.
But you know, like when I was at Hasbro, you know, I was the only black guy on the Marvel team, you know, so it was never like I was the first, but definitely, you know, one of the few, if not the only.
And did you help? You helped start the Marvel Legends, right? That toy line.
Yeah.
Like that's the Would you say that that's the most popular toy line in the game?
I mean,
or one of them.
I mean, I guess so. We didn't set it out to be that like that. Mm-hmm. You know, we just wanted to do something cool.
Yeah.
And I mean, it was the brainchild of Jesse Falcon. You know, and we all kind of had a hand in the office to make. We all thought it was a dope ass idea, and we all wanted to contribute to the dope idea.
Sure.
You know, I think that was what was cool about it. We all just had a united feeling of wanting to make this cool as shit, because
right.
We just wanted to see the characters that we always loved in comic books in toy form.
Yeah.
Not knowing that everyone else was going to be blown away, or that it was going to be the first to do this or to achieve that. And, you know, we just wanted to do something that was just cool for us.
Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, 'cause it's constantly like, you can never find these figures in the store. Like,
yeah, I mean, it's amazing. It's amazing just to see how they still traded and stuff like that. How they still, you know, sold on the secondary and tertiary markets and stuff like that. And I mean, it's pretty cool. I mean, it is dope to be a part of. You know, it was never something that I or we set out to do. It's just like we just had a job to do, you know, and wanted to do some, and we had a cool ass job.
Sure. Yeah. How is the toy industry doing now? Like, especially after Toys R Us, like, can you speak on that?
Yeah. I mean, it definitely hurt a lot of, you know, a lot of companies that were dependent on that type of business, you know. Definitely. You start seeing how certain companies are a little bit more nimble or a little bit on the forefront of things like Funko, for instance. Like, you see how they're
right
in a lot of different markets. You know, they really have diversified where they are, you know, and so they really think outside the box of not just what they offer as far as product, but where those products are sold too.
Yeah, I remember seeing like a lot of toys at Books a Million. Like, I perform in Atlantic City a lot, and like at the Borgata, and I like going out of like outside of town sometimes and going to the movies or whatever. And I just walked into a Books a Million. They had all kinds of toys that you never really see. Like, they did have the Legends. They have some, like, I guess, Todd McFarlane type toys. And
yeah,
I just I don't know, like, I like, where are kids finding these toys now? I guess, I mean, I'm not watching, I guess, Nickelodeon and all that stuff, but
I guess like when it comes to stuff like Funko, is like, you know, they're, you know, they got a really cool model, and their model is everyone is a fan of something, you know.
Yeah.
and so they're able to really do these kind of like shotgun blasts and they just been hitting the targets, you know. But I think that there's something inherent in within kids, intrinsic in kids, that make them want to have a cool toy.
Yeah,
you know, something in their hands that's pretty cool and something to fiddle with, to fidget with, you know, because action figures are, you know, something like G.I. Joe's is something for us to fiddle with, just like a little fidget spinner or a yo-yo. There's really no difference. It's something for us to fiddle and fidget with, you know? So
yeah,
kids always kind of find that thing. It's just a matter of how, you know, kind of grabbing hold of them, you know, showing that this is cool as opposed to that.
Right. Because I've just kind of been in the world, like, I've subscribed to, like, Shartimus Prime and Boog. He's, like, across the way in Harlem, and, like, X-Manny 87. Maybe you, I think you do know Shartimus Prime.
Yeah, man. Shartimus. I do know Shartimus Prime.
Yeah, like, because it's, like, that's how I find out about stuff, or, like, they review these figures and stuff like that. And then a lot of these other cats, like, I get jealous of them because they'll walk into a Target and, like, oh, here's the Marvel Legends Spider-Man. Like, I just, yeah. It's just, like, at the store. Like, you don't have to order it online. I feel like that's part of what I feel like I'm missing, except for the time I went into a Walmart in upstate New York and I just happened to find most of the Marvel Legends Black Panther wave.
Right, and it was
just like a random. I was like, "Well, I have to buy them all because they're there." Like, all right,
yeah, you know that's part of the hunt, you know, and then having, you know, that's when it becomes. That's when the game becomes a little bit nasty.
Yeah,
when you can have, you know, people either on the outside getting stuff for you, or the store inside, you know, people are hawking it, and you know, that's when things can kind of get nasty and the business side of it gets really funky, gets mm-hmm. really nasty.
Yeah, just looking at it, like on eBay, like certain, like the, which one that I wouldn't mind having, but I don't want to pay too much for them. That PlayStation Spider-Verse action figure, like that Marvel Legends version, like they're selling them for like $60 and it's like, I'm not gonna do that. But like, I just wonder. It's like, cause you go into the store, like the Target near me, like nothing's ever really there. I bought a couple Captain Marvel figures, but I don't think people really like that movie that much, so they didn't really care about that stuff. But like, the Target,
it's funny, man. Like, people, you know, really don't know that, like, kind of like the dark side of this collecting. You know,
speak on that, because it is. There's a couple of comedians, some of my comedian friends that we talk about figures and stuff. And every now and then, like, I'll post a figure that I buy from somewhere. But like he said, like, yeah, dude, they'll try to get you on eBay. Like, don't pay more than $30 for that figure. You know, like, it's, speak on it a little bit, because I don't know.
I mean, there's the definite dark side, you know. There's, well, I mean, you have guys that try to obviously get over when they say they have particular products when they don't.
Mm.
But you know, you also have a dark side when it comes down to who gets credit for what, you know, and who let who know where something is, who got something for whoever.
Yeah.
And certain cliques wound up becoming you know, a thing. And I never would have expected to you know, see any of that stuff, but there is a dark side, man. I mean, I've seen some relationships, because at the bottom line, at the end of the day, is like, this is all based, there's an honor system to all of this.
Mm-hmm.
And once that honor system, if that honor system isn't upheld, or if it's disrupted, or, you know, and then you get, it's predominantly males in this. So,
right.
You know, when you get that type of fever pitch going on top of that honor, you know, things are taken a little bit more seriously. You know, things that one may not feel as though is should be taken as serious, but it is.
Yeah.
You know, and because especially when, like, now the world is much more smaller. We have, you know, a lot of ways to communicate and
right.
know ahead of time what's where. But there was a period when you didn't know what was going on, or, you know, you had one guy that could tap into the Walmart system and know what was going on. He was the beholder of all the information and shit like that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it was a lot, you know, when guys who didn't know, they were trying to get these toys, these figures, and they had to do like side deals or drive a certain amount of miles to a certain place to get it.
Wow.
You know, and when you think of that, like if you got a guy who had to work all week, had to, you know, finally gets off work, maybe had to get off work early.
Yeah.
Drive, you know, 300 or 400 miles to go to a particular store to get this product, and he spent all this money on gas and all that other stuff. When you start factoring stuff like that into the equation, that's when the dark side becomes a reality.
Right, right.
You know, and that's why I kind of laughed when you said Chardon's Prime, because even like with that, you know, it was like he was embroiled in some little drama with him and another guy, D Amazing.
Okay.
And
I think I follow him too.
Yeah, and it was basically out of miscommunication. Basically, it's miscommunication, you know. Mm. But both of, you know, and both of them have taken their words personal.
Mm,
and like how social media is right now, you know, you can take things very personal, and sometimes you don't know how to interpret certain words, and some words you interpret another way.
It's like rap beef.
Right.
Shit.
You know, and things happen. And it, so, but there's a multitude of things that kind of, that I've experienced that happened. I remember one time a guy called me out.
What, for know, what? If you can speak on it, if you want, if you
don't. I mean, shit, I remember when Chardon's Prime kind of called us out, and I was like, yo, hold up. Well, fuck that. I'll be here. You know, I remember when, like, one time he was like, somebody need to punch, like, the Haswell guys in the face. And I was like, hold up. You know, hey, I will be at booth so-and-so. I'll be there Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. I'll be there. And then you can come and talk to me man to man.
Okay. Damn.
You know what I mean? Like it was like stuff, but it started off like YouTube beefs and
yeah.
chat room beefs and stuff like that, you know? But like sometimes things are said and but they're touched upon in a personal nature, and it's like, well, wait a minute, why I gotta be an asshole? Why I gotta be all this, that, right. and the third?
Yeah.
Like we're just talking about toys, or whatever. But then you know, you put it to another level.
Yeah, that's you crazy, know? Man. Wow.
So, but I remember a guy one time in the forum, like he said some real nasty things about me, like personally, and I was like, yo, you don't even know me like that.
Wow.
You know, and I'm approachable. Like you can email me.
Yeah.
I'm at the conventions and all that. You can always approach me and ask me any question. Like no question is off topic, as long as you have some respect. That's all I ask.
Right.
Like that's all I ask. Like you don't even have to like me. I don't give a shit. But just respect me, because I'm going to respect you.
Yeah.
You know. So that's it. But when it comes to like you know punching somebody in the face and. You know, fuck your life, and you know, and when you throw family into the mix, like, well, wait a minute, you're getting way, way, way off target,
right?
And I'm feeling some kind of way about that.
Oh yeah, it's like that. I mean, I guess that's like that in every industry. Like you just think it's just like. When you look at it on a macro level, it's just like, God, it's just toys. But then when you deal with dudes, you know, dudes are going to.
Yeah, because it's like, you know, we're artists. We're sensitive about shit.
Exactly. Word to Erykah Badu. Yeah.
Right?
Right.
But, but also, too, you know, when you do put out a product, you want that product to win. You're on
right.
the, you, you're on, that's your team.
Mm-hmm.
And it's more than just you. There's a whole group of people that also put their time and energy into this whole thing. The engineers and painters and marketers and,
right,
you know, salespeople. Like, everyone had to put their all into making this one product work, mm-hmm, for you. And we're all on the same team. So when you have this collective group of individuals moving in unison for this overall win, certain things you begin to take personal.
Right.
You know, because you're putting all into it. You're putting your thought into it. You're putting your energy into it. So it becomes less and less like, you know, this is just toys, and it becomes more and more about, like, this is about me.
My craft.
Right. Or, yeah, or not me, like, just, it's all about me, and and I did this all, but me, like, you know, this is personal. You're personally offending me because we're all putting our all into it. When you diss me, you're dissing that woman that painted this head.
Yeah.
You know, this thing or whatever. Like, you're dissing my homeboy who had to present this and who stayed up all night to work on a presentation or whatever. Like, there's other people that's involved that have personally put their all into making this product work.
Do you think it's so, like, go ahead, I'm sorry.
It's just so easy for one to dismiss all of that, you know, and not even think about that and just easily say, oh, well, it's fucked up. It looks like shit. They should die.
And I think part of it's like people have these internet muscles or all that stuff that makes them feel like they're big and bad. And I wonder how many of these people have ever created anything or ever stood up in front of people to present a piece of art, you know? And it's,
well, I think one of the things that muscle, as you say, do it, what they do become is almost like a tool.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a tool, like that criticism becomes a tool, and then that tool winds up becoming an inspiration, then that inspiration you kind of put into it. So it's almost like they feed you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like that criticism feeds you. It can either make you or break you. And when it doesn't break you, then it's like, all right, I'm gonna take whatever they say is all messed up and wrong, and then I'm gonna put into it. So now I'm gonna make it airtight.
Yeah.
Now you can't. Now, and where can you go now? All right, you know, like, I remember when I worked on the Marvel Universe 3¾-inch figures, like, everyone hated that. Everyone hated it. And they hated it because it wasn't Marvel Legends, and they hated it because it was the scale, and they hated it because the figures that the characters that they wanted didn't come out in 6 inches, they came in that scale. Like every thing you can think of, they hated it. And I wanted all that hate. I mean, I loved it. I loved it. And every criticism I just put into it, every criticism that they had.
Now, is that something that, like, the hate and all that, is that something that you grew to love? Like, at first, were you averse to it? Or is the hate something that became the thing that drove you?
I mean, it drove me. It drove me because I knew that what lurked in my head is what everyone else wanted. They just had to be shown what it was.
Okay.
You know, like I knew that, because, I mean, everything that I put into that line was everything I grew up on and me and my boys talked about.
Yeah.
What we grew up on, like what we read, what we you know, what we played with and what we drew and what we imagined. Like, it was all that. So all that was in my head. All I had to do was put it out there. And I knew that if I had the means to put it out there, like, this, all right, this is what I got to work with. So now I'm going to put it out there using this vehicle. I knew that they would dig it. They just had to see it.
Now, that's a great point that you made. Now, you're making me think about this now. How do you keep, because ideally you're making toys, things for children to, like, run with their imagination. How do you, as an adult hold on to your creativity and then the stuff that you liked when you were a child? How do you hold on to it in a world that's kind of hard for you to do that? That makes it hard for you to do that in a lot of ways.
You can't lose sight of the fact that you were once young.
Mm-hmm.
And the older I get, the more that I see and realize how people can lose sight of who they once were, who mm-hmm. they once, you know, who their childhood or. But I mean, sometimes you just gotta let loose and bug out.
Yeah.
I think that, but also too, I think that kids don't know what's cool unless you show them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They're the ones that say they want, like, let me see it again when you show them the magic trick. They don't know what the hell the trick is.
Right.
You know, so it's like adults are the ones that make what is cool, cool. It's just the kids have to see it. You know, once they see it, they're like, oh, shit, because they don't know. Everything is new to them. They have no point of reference.
Right.
They have zero point of reference. This is why, to every kid, their father is the most funniest, magical being in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Or like, you know, for there's a period between like 1 and 3 years, 3, 4, 5 years when, and it stays with the kid forever. You know what I mean? Like you always admire your father, but there's a point where you think your dad is the most magical being in the world.
Yeah. That's
like,
true.
Whatever joke he says is the funniest joke because it's the first time you ever heard it.
Yeah.
Whatever magic trick he shows you, it's the first time you ever saw it.
Mm-hmm.
So, when there's no point of reference, it's going to stay ingrained in you. You know, like the first time you caught the fish with your dad, wow, that was I never saw a fish like that.
Yeah.
Because that was the first time you had no point of reference. So, and this is one reason why, you know, one reason why kids and adult men love cars, you know, because cars, you make a nice, beautiful car, you know, which is designed by an adult, but you show it to a kid and they'll love it too.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Yep.
You know, and it's the adult is the one who creates that. The adult is the one who can make that. Who can bring that manifestation into reality? But you have to tap into your soul. You have to remember what it was to be that kid. So it becomes like a cycle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the kid feeds that older soul, and that older soul feeds that younger soul, that young spirit.
Yeah, no, that's real, you man. Because I think about that a lot. Like when you. Like doing comedy and acting and stuff, it's like how can you continue to be an artist when the world's so like fucked up and all
so
that?
So fucked up, right? And yeah. it's like it's almost like the Joker. Like, why so serious?
Yeah.
And I was saying it to myself the other day. Like, why so like we make life more serious, and with that seriousness, it becomes more complicated. Like we take on more serious issues. Like we take on serious relationships.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we take on serious roles. We want to do serious things. We want to make serious money so we can, you know, appear more serious and
right.
show that, you know, we're moving in that serious direction. And, you know, we make it more complicated when life is really simple, but we add on to things that make it real hard and serious.
Yeah.
And sometimes, you know, we got to step back and like, damn, like, you know, I still have little toys and action figures around. You know, I still carry a shit ton of change in my pocket. My wife gets ticked off. She got to empty my pockets in the laundromat. when she's about to wash my clothes in the laundry because I got change in there like a little kid. Like, there's certain things that I know that I need to just kind of keep around me just to stay in touch, you know, especially the further out I go. Like, I'm so far removed from my surroundings. You know, I always love Atlantic City and Pleasantville, New Jersey and all that. Like, I always love that. I always kind of keep that in me.
Yeah.
So, like, I have to, you know, kind of remember those times and tap into that, you know, and even sometimes the good times and the bad times, you know what I mean?
Right.
But you know, tap in that so you can get that feeling again.
Yeah. I think that's a great way to end it, man. David, thanks so much for doing this. This is a real treat for me.
And man, thank you, man.
Yeah, I was super excited to talk to you because I always like just get interested in black artists that, you know, that are in a craft that you know, you don't see that many in, at least, you know, I'm sure they're there, but I always like highlighting people like you.
It's funny, man, because growing up, growing up, I always had brothers that could draw better than me.
Yeah.
But that were older and they were like, man, you just keep on doing it. Keep on doing it. You know what I mean? And just stay with it. Stay with it. That's what they will always say.
Mm-hmm.
I remember, I mean, it was what someone would probably call like a wino that was on the bus with me. He was like, man, I used to be the best. You know, see that mural on the wall? I did all that. He said, but you stay with it, man. I stopped, but you stay with it. Stay with it.
Yeah.
And the older that I got, the less and less I saw people that looked like me doing this.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of forced me to stay with it.
Yeah.
Like how you said, like, you know, how you asked, you know, was I the only black one in the building and, you know, the only black one around and all that? Like, there was a lot of times when I was, you know, one of the few.
Right, right.
But the few was so spread out that, you know, it was, we weren't in close proximity. So sometimes it felt like we were out there all our own.
Yeah.
But I had to. It was like hearing those old brothers like, man, stay with it. Stay with it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what just kind of kept me going and going. And I think that for some people, they never really had to have that kind of thing with them. Like, you know, some people were a little bit more entitled, so they were able to go to a better art school or have a little bit more better resources and all that. So, like, certain things just become second nature.
Right.
But, you know, growing up, my idol was JJ from Good Times. I didn't have,
yeah,
you know, other than that, it was brothers like on the street saying to stay with it, stay with it. It wasn't like, you know, I could rap, you know, say it was Rembrandt and Picasso and all that.
Sure.
And, you know, and then other than that, my idols were, you know, John Byrne, John Buscema, guys who drew comic books.
Right.
You know, and I didn't know what they looked like, you know, and maybe that was something that benefited me, that the fact that I knew their name, but I didn't know what they looked like.
Yeah.
You know, but it was always that stay with it, you know, just hearing all the older brothers and relatives and, you know, my grandmother and just saying, just stay with it, you know, and drawing helped me build a career. It got me out of trouble, you know,
right.
You know, it did a lot for me, you know, and just by staying with it, you know, and that's what I try to just tell cats that do have, even, you know, everyone has everyone is an artist. Everyone has an ability to create something. You know, it may not be what you think a drawing should look like, but you may be able to create words. You may be able to create fashion, whatever it is.
Yeah.
But everyone has something. You know, you just got to stick with it.
I think that's more than half the battle right there, because it's like, one, yeah, obviously you want to have the talent and the work ethic and everything, but it really is just staying in the game, and you realize how things will come. Like, I mean, that's happened to me. Like, I'm a living testimony to that. Like, where it's just been, now you just start to progressively have like incremental success and this incremental progress, and where it's like you can look in the mirror and be like, well, I did it myself. You know, obviously there are people that help you and everything like that, but you did it. The people that people only start helping you when you find that you're helping yourself, and when you're putting yourself in the position to be successful. And I mean, that's what I've found. So yeah, man.
And then you helping the ones that along the way too,
right?
You know, and because like there's a cat watching you, you know, yeah. watching there's a young kid watching your moves that want to do what you do, and it's like, man, that's my goal right there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like we all have some type of responsibility. We may not know what that responsibility is, but we all have some role to play and like, you know, trying to do our best and with that, you know, carrying somebody, helping somebody along the way.
Yeah.
And you know, my favorite rapper is Rakim. So he had a line, "Not bugging the brother," said, "Dick him, I never tell him, and couldn't follow lead long enough, so I drug him." Like, basically, he you know, the brother couldn't take it no more, so he drug him. You know,
yeah.
he drug him along. And sometimes we lose sight of that. You know, we lose sight of we think too highly of the crab in the basket mentality as opposed to pulling each other up. I kind of slurred that line, but Rakim was my man, so it was following the leader.
sure, yeah, one of the greats. Yeah, no, that's real talk, man. I had a buddy, one of my comedian friends, that like got diagnosed with cancer, and he's gonna recover and everything. And we did like a little benefit for him, like a couple nights ago, and it was just like a beautiful thing. Like it was just like, you know, comedians like roasting each other, roasting him. And it was just like, wow, this is a community. Like, this is something that I was looking for. Like, just living in Chicago. I was doing a lot of theater, working. I didn't know anybody, built a community, had to leave it. And then, like, within the last 10 years, like, finding another community in this area. And then like the New York tri-state area, where it's like, I've built this thing that, and for myself, and I'm a part of this community, you know,
right.
And it made me feel good.
Yeah. You know, it's funny, man. I think that right there is the thing that, I think that that's, you know, the thing that I dig the most is that a community has spawned out of something that I always thought was cool. Like, me and my boys always knew comic books were cool and toys were cool and the movies were cool. We always knew that. And we always grabbed for somehow, some way, we always gravitated to other cats that thought the same thing.
Yeah. Right.
So it's like, man, to see how these communities have come up, like the toy groups and the action figure photography groups and the YouTube groups, man.
Yeah.
Like those, like to actually see that stuff, like that's cool, man. To me, that's cooler than actually being part of this toy thing. Like just seeing this group of people just having something to commune around.
Right.
You know what I mean? That is really, for all intents and purposes, man, like something to always be enjoyed. You know, we always had a toy growing up, a favorite toy or a toy that we wish we had. And it's like, man, it's something so simple. It's simple shit.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with you 100%, man. Like, it's just something that kind of made me feel good about, like these action figures. It's like it tapped into something I felt like maybe I was missing. I don't know. I don't know what it was, but it was just like it was Black Panther. It was Star Wars. It was seeing that character of Finn. I know people shit on the movies, but it was like, wow, fucking like a black dude. Like,
did you ever have a Sun Man growing up?
No, I didn't. I remember him. I don't know if we thought he was cool or not.
Right,
I'm gonna
right,
admit
right.
that. I'm gonna admit that.
I mean,
like,
he did look whack. He did look kind of whack.
It was like something that, like, some like almost like a Hotep guy would like push on you, like he would force it on you.
That's the thing that, honestly, man, I remember people used to always ask me like I should make my own black characters and stuff like that.
Uh huh.
And I was always down with it, like me being the artist, you know, my thing is, I'll do the penciling and have somebody do the writing, and you just come up with the idea, and then I can visualize it.
Sure.
But people will always come up with these super, super, super Afrocentric characters.
He helps kids read.
yeah. Or like super, super, super Black. And it was like, why can't he just be a regular type of character or a regular type of villain? You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, why can't we create a Magneto that just happened to be Black?
Right.
Or a vampire that just happened to be Black? You know what I mean? Like, why got to be like super, super, super Afrocentric? You know, like, why got to have, like, why?
Yeah.
You know, and that would just always kind of throw me off. You know what I mean? Like, I just wanted to do like a really dope ass character that just happened to be Black.
Yeah. I agree, man. Like, I think that was the thing. That was the holdup for me with figures like that. And I think there was just like there was a dearth. There wasn't that many. Like, there was, like I said, like there was that the Winston, that Ernie Hudson Ghostbusters figure. Mm-hmm. And I don't really Lando Calrissian.
Mm-hmm. But then you also got me, War Machine.
Yes, you were War Machine. But even that was like, that was in the last 10 years though, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it was like, there weren't that many. And I think now, like when we were talking about Black Panther, I think there's kids have that now. Like, they'll have all those figures and all those different characters to really enjoy and not have to be, like, looking for something. It's not anything, because I knew I was Black and I was proud to be Black, but, you know, I had Superman. And then like, I liked football and sports. So, like, those guys, other than my dad, were my heroes and stuff like that.
Right.
But
it
was definitely, like... Because I even remember like having like a flashback or something where one of my buddies had a cookout and it was his son's birthday. And I remember like, oh, I got to get something for his son. And I went into Target and I bought him like all these different toys because I was like, oh, my God, well, I would want this. I got him shit that I would want. Like, and it was cool stuff, you know, like I knew you like Ninja Turtles and I bought some Transformers stuff. And that's when I had like, oh, man, I remember this. Like, I just wonder what, because, and then I know we got to wrap up. But I remember like going into Toys R Us and having that Goosebumps. And I'm kind of worried that kids don't have that. Like, yeah, they play with the iPads and stuff, but I don't know. Like,
well, you know, because like it was an experience when you went into the toy store. Like,
yeah.
It was an experience going into KB.
Right.
Toy store or going to Toys R Us back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, kids, like, it was an experience going to an arcade back in the
day. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and right now, kids really don't have that experience. You know, it's funny. Like if they go to GameStop and they want a game, they got to wait in line.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And which forces them to have their head down into their phones. And it's like, back in the day, we just had so many experiences where it was tactile. Where you could actually touch and see what was going on. And that's part of the problem why these kids aren't engaged anymore, because we're not engaged with them.
That's true. Because when you would go to Toys R Us, like, I'll never forget, and I probably said this 1,000 times on the podcast, where, like, you get a good report card, your mom or dad is taking you to Toys R Us, and you go to Toys R Us, you get the video game, you pull that little slip out, and you take it, and your dad, mom or dad pays for it, then they ring you up, and then they go to that little... cubby where they pull the game out. It was like a ritual.
Right.
It was like a real thing. Like, and I got you get the game, and you don't even eat because you're so excited to play the video game. It's just like I remember my dad, like, more than 20 years ago, like, coming home and giving me the first Tomb Raider game.
Right.
Like him picking it up.
It's funny, man. I think that to a certain degree, man, the older collector kind of messed the game up too, you know, and, yeah. and made the game so like by making it unattainable for the kid.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that you kind of bullied them out of it in a way.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know, man. It's a series of reasons as to why you know why toys are viewed the way they are viewed now, like as far as popularity, why they aren't as popular or why kids aren't as engaged anymore. You know, I don't buy. To me, kids are the same creatures that they've always been
mm-hmm.
for eons. You know, it's like you just. A kid, a baby, a little boy, a little girl, they'll play with a box. They'll play with right. a stick. They'll play with whatever is in front of them. You know, it's all about how you engage with them. And I think that, you know, we've lost sight of engaging with them. We've given these kids a lot of stuff so they can watch it. So they can yeah. watch what's going on, you know, in the stories already told. For them, as opposed to them creating the story themselves.
And that's true, because like I remember I'm an only child also, and I think that's how my imagination got sparked, where that's all I had was the action figures, and right. you play with them and you know have these stories with them. I learned how to read because of the comic books that came with the action figures.
Right.
My mom tells me the story about me crying because I couldn't read. And so she couldn't read the little comic books from those. I think it was those Superman, those Kenner action figures where you squeeze the leg and the fist move. They do the pump. You probably remember those.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, like I used to have those. And like, you know, just trying to, you just having an imagination. I think, I don't know. But I guess it's still around, but you just kind of, it just seems like some of it's lost and. Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's still around. It's just that we have so much to get in the way.
Yeah. Because I walk into Target. I walk into Target or a Walmart. I'm thinking maybe because I'm so close to... I live in Hackensack. And there's so many people around. It's really... It's essentially a commuter town, really, into New York City. But then, like... Because, like, you go into the toys... You go in the toy section in Target. There's hardly anything there. But then when I was out doing a show like way upstate New York, and then they did have a couple of those figures. Like they did have the Black Panther wave. I don't know if it's probably not that many black people want up there. Maybe let me not say that. But I just went, you know, I was able to find it all the way up there, you know, but just not nothing around me. And you just wonder how these kids, if they really want a toy, how they get it. Or are they just casual collectors like me? Are these dudes that are on another level that are just really intense about it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because most of the things, like I was in GameStop a week ago, and I bought the Shuri action figure in the Marvel wave, and they actually had those like the Far From Home Spider-Man, and I ordered it from Megalopolis like a couple weeks ago, and got it that way because I didn't see him anywhere.
Right,
he wasn't in the stores. So, I don't know.
Yeah, man. The hunt is, the struggle is real, boy.
Yeah. It's worse than sneakers.
Yeah.
I don't know if you're into sneakers at all, but it's.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it could be just as bad.
Yeah. Just some of these sneakers, like the Nike sneaker app is just, I think it's a load of shit.
I mean, I know, like, there's guys that would pay top dollar for, like, you know, you figures that aren't like test pilots and, you know, they were never released or
mm-hmm.
or they're not complete, you know, and don't have any paint or any deco on them and stuff like that. Like, I know guys who pay top dollar for stuff like that. It's crazy. I know cats have been thrown in jail for selling stuff.
Oh, wow. Jesus. Damn.
You know, selling things that they shouldn't have been selling, like prototypes and things like that.
Oh man,
I mean, that's when it that's what I'm saying. Like the dark side of it. There is an underbelly of everything.
Yeah, because I only think like these Marvel Legends are dope to me, and I see like these hot toy collectibles. That's on another level. That's like unless I hit it big, I wouldn't even think about trying to get any of the. Well, maybe there would be a couple that I would get, but just off the rip, like. I'm just gonna stick with these Marvel Legends for now.
Right.
Yeah. Maybe I do like that Mayfex Spider-Man, that Miles Morales, that's like close to $100.
Right.
That's supposed to be out next year. That I do. I'm partial to these black action figures, so I would spend some money on that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But other than that, like I don't know.
Do you ever get the WWE figures?
I'm not into wrestling like I used to be. I was into it when I was a kid, but I think I don't know what happened. Like I just made the shift to being more of a nerd about movies. Like I think around the time, like, cause it used to be action figures, football, baseball, basketball cards. And then around like the late teens, I was started to be a movie nerd.
Right.
And
I mean, because the WWE, man, I mean, it really is one of the most diverse action figure lines out there.
I'm sure it is, because it's still big business. Like half the comedians that I know, more than half of them love wrestling. Like they just they love it. There's quite a few that will probably love to talk to you about those toys, because like I remember like the big, like those Hulk Hogan. Well, it's it was WWF back then, but those big, I guess they might have been a 10 inch figure. Yeah. They were all rubber.
Yeah, yep.
I remember those. I remember liking those. The ones you put your thumb in and you could wrestle with them. I had a bunch of those. I had a lot of toys, man. Mm-hmm. I had a good childhood.
Yeah, those Galoob figures.
Yes, yeah. And so I had like I like them, and I just don't know anything about I don't know that much about them anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But is that's what you mainly focus on now, right?
Yep. Yeah. Yep.
And that keeps you busy though, right?
Oh yeah.
It has to.
Yeah, it keeps us on our toes.
Because the fans are probably psycho about it, right?
Well, it's not that. I mean, you're dealing with real people.
Yeah.
You know, those superstars, they're real, real, real people. So, you know, sometimes they get hurt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes they, like, things just happen.
Headquarters are in Hartford? Where's W? Is that, I feel like I've seen the headquarters.
Yeah, in Connecticut.
Somewhere in Connecticut.
Stanford.
Yes, okay, yeah, because I remember passing it. The last time I went up to
like on 90, you can see off of 95.
Yeah, up in because I went to see some go up to Westport, and I was like, oh, there's a WWE. Yeah, that's what's up. Well, what's next for you after Comic-Con? Like, what are you working on?
Well, my focus is WWE, so you know I'm back on my day to day, making sure got some stuff that we're working on for our 2020 line and guiding that along. And that's what keeps me busy.
So out in California, LA?
Well, Mattel is. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yep.
Okay. Well, I think we'll end it, man. I think this was more than what I expected. I really appreciate you taking the time to sit down and talk with me, man.
Yeah,
this was
cool,
awesome.
Man. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I might have to bother you months down the line. I won't bother you too much.
Cool.
But I appreciate the time. And hold on to the line, and I'm going to sign off here. Thanks, everybody.
Okay,
thanks, everybody, for listening. Appreciate you. Talk to you next time.